A Werewolf Shifter Romance Audiobook, written by Catherine Stewart. Prologue. I sentenced my mate to death today. Was it my duty as king, or was it the ghost of my father's trust, a poison I let infect my soul? Who is she, this unlooked-for Omega, whose scent screams innocence while all evidence screams guilt? Why does my own wolf howl at the thought of her end? A web of lies tightens around my throne. And in saving her life, I may have just handed her a fate far worse than the executioner's axe, a fate bound to my own. I hope we all get the love we want or need. Chapter 1. The pestle ground against stone. Grind, crush, release. That was the rhythm of Doris's life. The only rhythm she trusted. Outside, the Whisperwood lived up to its name, its ancient trees murmuring secrets only she seemed to hear. Inside, the air was thick with the scent of drying lavender, chamomile, and the sharp, clean smell of pine resin. This was her world, a small, cluttered cottage that was more a part of the forest than of the pack. And she liked it that way. Her hands, stained with berry juice and dirt, worked a mash of comfrey root into a paste, a perfect healing salve. For a moment, she felt a sliver of peace. A quiet contentment that was as rare and precious as the moon petal she kept locked away. But then the cottage door swung open without a knock, a jarring clang that shattered her solitude. Kyle, a young beta with more muscle than manners, swaggered in. He tossed a shallow gash on his forearm onto her workbench as if it were a piece of meat. "Fix it, Hedgewitch." Doris flinched, not at the blood, but at the name, Hedgewitch. The word stung. A casual cruelty that made her feel small, insignificant. Her goal was simply to make the salve, to heal. But now, all she wanted was for him to leave. "It will take a moment," she whispered, her voice as soft as moss. He scoffed, a puff of air that smelled of arrogance. "Just hurry up." Her hands trembled slightly as she applied the poultice. She worked quickly, her movements precise. She was good at this. More importantly, she knew she was. But no matter how hard she tried, that knowledge never seemed to translate into confidence. Kale barely grunted his thanks, tossing a few measly copper coins on the table, not even half of what the salve was worth. Because of that, a familiar ache bloomed in her chest. She opened her mouth to protest, to say something, but the words caught in her throat. He was a beta. She was just an Omega. An unlooked-for Omega at that. So she said nothing. She just watched him leave, her silence a cage she built around herself every single day. Moments later, as the silence returned, she looked at the coins. Not enough. Never enough. She checked her supplies, a cold dread seeping into her stomach. The comfrey was low, but worse. She was completely out of silverleaf, the one herb she couldn't grow herself. The one herb she had to get from the main pack market. A shiver went down her spine. The market, with its crowds, its noise, its judging eyes. She had to go. She had no choice. She didn't know what scared her more, the thought of running out of herbs or the thought of facing the world outside her door. Chapter 2. The pack market was a chaotic symphony of sound and smell. Shouts of vendors, the sizzle of roasting boar, the metallic tang of the blacksmith's forge. It was everything her cottage wasn't. Doris kept her head down, her cloak pulled tight, a small gray mouse trying to navigate a den of wolves. Her goal was simple. Get the silver leaf. Get out. Don't be seen. Yet, even so, she couldn't help but overhear them. Lord Valerius, King Damon's beta, his voice smooth as polished riverstone, was speaking to another council member. His face was a mask of perfect, somber concern. "Elder Theron's condition worsens by the hour," he said, his voice just loud enough to carry. "It's this preoccupation of the king's, this endless brooding. It leaves the rest of us to manage the real threats." Doris froze. The king? Elder Theron? Deep down, she knew the truth. This was not idle gossip. This was politics, sharp and deadly. She felt a prickle of unease, a sense of being somewhere she shouldn't be. She tried to move away, to melt back into the crowd. But then, Valerius's gaze swept across the market. For the span of a breath, his eyes, sharp, intelligent, and cold as ice, seemed to lock onto hers. It was nothing, a fleeting glance. It had to be. Why would the King's Beta ever notice someone like her? Still, a chill that had nothing to do with the morning air slithered down her spine. She grabbed a bundle of silver leaf from a stall, her hands shaking as she paid. She had to get away. Now. As she turned to flee, she bumped into a royal guard. He didn't even look at her, just shoved her aside. And just like that, everything changed. In that moment, she was reminded of her place. Insignificant. Invisible. A ghost in her own pack. She clutched her herbs and ran, the feeling of Valerius's eyes burning on her back. Chapter 3. That night, the forest howled. A storm raged outside, mirroring the turmoil in Doris's heart. She was back in her sanctuary, the scent of silver leaf a small comfort in the growing darkness. She tried to tell herself the feeling of dread was just the storm. She tried to believe the encounter at the market meant nothing. She was just settling down, a cup of chamomile tea in her hands, when a violent, percussive bang rattled her door. It wasn't a knock. It was a demand. Before she could move, the door splintered inward. Two royal guards filled the doorway, their massive forms silhouetted against the lightning-streaked sky. Rain and wind whipped into her small cottage, extinguishing her candle and plunging the room into shadows and chaos. Her heart leaped into her throat. Her goal was to be safe, to be alone. Now, her home was invaded. "Doris of the Whisperwood?" the lead guard snarled, his voice a low growl that vibrated through the floorboards. She could only nod, her voice stolen by terror. Without another word, he stepped forward, holding up a small glass vial. It was one of hers. She recognized the tiny, almost invisible scratch she put on the bottom of all her containers. But the liquid inside? It was a shimmering, sickly, unnatural green. A color of death. "This was found in Elder Theron's chambers," the guard said, his voice cold as a tombstone. "Your mark is upon it. You are accused of high treason and of poisoning a pack elder." The words hit her like a physical blow. Treason? Poison? Her? Her thoughts spun into a dizzying vortex of disbelief and terror. "No," she whispered, the sound swallowed by the storm. That's impossible. The guard didn't let her finish. His eyes were hard, devoid of mercy. He was judge, jury, and executioner, all in one. The air thickened, heavy with her doom. "On your knees, traitor." And as Doris collapsed to the floor, her world didn't just tilt. It shattered into a million pieces. The scent of rain and wet earth filled her senses, but all she could taste was the bitter promise of death. Chapter 4. Cold. That's all there was. Cold stone seeping through her thin tunic, cold iron bars, and the cold, chilling dread that had settled deep in her bones. The Citadel's dungeons were a world away from her warm, earth-scented cottage. There was no lavender here, no chamomile. Only the smell of damp straw, stale fear, and something metallic that reminded her of blood. Her mind was a whirlwind of confusion and terror, a storm she couldn't escape. Her goal? To wake up. This had to be a nightmare. But then, heavy footsteps echoed down the corridor, each one a hammer blow against her fragile hope. He appeared before her cell, a silhouette of immense power against the flickering torchlight, King Damon. In the flesh, he was even more intimidating than on the dais. He was carved from granite and shadow, with eyes the color of molten gold that seemed to see right through her. Deep down, she knew the truth. This was not a nightmare. This was her new reality. He dismissed the guards with a flick of his wrist. Just like that, they were alone. "You are the healer they call the Hedge Witch?" His voice was a low rumble, devoid of warmth, devoid of pity. It was the voice of a king who had seen too much and trusted too little. Doris scrambled to her feet, her body trembling. Her goal was simply to make him believe her, to see the truth. I am a healer, yes, she stammered, her words small and thin in the vast cold space. But I'm not. I didn't. He raised a hand, silencing her. Lord Valerius has presented me with evidence, a vial with your mark, witnesses who saw you near the Elder's chambers, motives I cannot yet fathom. He took a step closer to the bars, and the air thickened. With his scent in the air, a sharp, clean mix of pine and winter frost, her wolf stirred for the first time in days, a flicker of something primal and confusing. Your scent, he murmured, his golden eyes narrowing. It holds no deceit, only terror. The space between them burned. He was the king, the alpha, the man who held her life in his hands. And yet, there was something else there, a war raging behind his stoic mask. His beast, his very soul, was at odds with the evidence before him. Maybe it was fate that he could sense her innocence, or maybe he was just blinded by a desire he didn't understand. Because of that, his next words were a cruel twist of the knife. The evidence is absolute, he stated, his voice flat, emotionless. He turned to leave her in the crushing darkness, her last hope extinguished. But then he paused, his back still to her. But your fear is real. And with that one small crack in his kingly armor, he left her alone with the echoing silence and the terrifying question of which he would ultimately believe. The lies of his most trusted friend, or the fear of an insignificant Omega. Chapter 5. Days blurred into a haze of fear and deliberation. Doris was dragged from her cell to the main courtyard, a vast open-air amphitheater of judgment. The sun was a cruel, blinding eye in the sky. The faces of the pack were a sea of shifting expressions, curiosity, contempt, and a chilling, hungry desire for blood. Her goal was to find her voice, to scream her innocence, but her throat was tight, her tongue thick with terror. From there, Lord Valerius took the stage. He was magnificent in his deceit. His voice, usually so smooth and charismatic, was now filled with a righteous, sorrowful thunder. He painted a picture of Doris not as a simple healer, but as a rogue element, a venomous weed in their pristine garden. He twisted her solitude into sinister secrecy, her knowledge of herbs into a mastery of poisons. She works in the shadows, he boomed, his arm outstretched, pointing directly at her, consorting with who knows what, perhaps even the remnants of the human filth we drove from these lands generations ago. And in her jealousy, in her bitterness at being an outcast, she struck at the very heart of this pack, our revered Elder Theron. The crowd roared. The sound was a physical blow, a wave of hatred that slammed into her. She saw Damon on his throne, his face an unreadable mask of stone, but his hands. His hands were clenched so tightly on the armrests that his knuckles were white. He was a king, torn between his duty to appear strong and the nagging, primal whisper of his own beast that told him this was all wrong. He had to be a king. He couldn't be weak. Not now. Doris tried to speak. She opened her mouth, but only a choked sob escaped. Her core flaw, her lifelong belief in her own insignificance, had silenced her completely. She was a ghost at her own trial. The moment their eyes locked across the courtyard, she saw the war in his, the man versus the king, the instinct versus the evidence. And with every heartbeat, she knew which one was losing. What followed was the inevitable. Valerius rested his case, his performance flawless. The council nodded in grim agreement. And Damon, seeing no other path that would not shatter the already fragile peace of his kingdom, rose to his feet. The silence that fell was heavy, suffocating. It was the silence of an execution. The council has found you. Guilty, he said. And though his voice was steady, Doris thought she heard a tremor, a hairline crack in the granite. The sentence is death, at dawn. And just like that, her world ended for the second time. Chapter 6. Dawn broke, painting the sky in strokes of bloody orange and bruised purple. It was a beautiful, terrible morning to die. Doris was forced to her knees, the rough stone of the execution block cold and unforgiving against her skin. The scent of old fear and spilled blood clung to the air, a ghost of executions past. Her goal now was simple, to die with some small shred of dignity, to not give them the satisfaction of her tears. The crowd was a silent, expectant mass. She could feel their eyes on her, a collective weight pressing her down. She saw Valerius, his face a perfect picture of solemn duty. She saw the executioner, a massive, grim-faced lichen, his muscles bunched as he tested the weight of his enormous axe. The blade glinted wickedly in the rising sun. Her pulse raced, a frantic drumbeat against the encroaching silence. This was it. The end. She took one last shaky breath, filling her lungs with the crisp morning air. She thought of her cottage, of the scent of lavender and the quiet murmur of the woods. A single tear escaped, tracing a path down her dust-smeared cheek. She squeezed her eyes shut. She would not beg. She would not scream. The executioner raised the axe. It arced upward, a dark, deadly crescent against the sky. The crowd held its breath. Stop. The roar was not a word. It was a primal force of nature, a sound of absolute, unquestionable authority that vibrated through the very stones of the citadel, shaking Doris to her core. It was the roar of a king. Her eyes snapped open. The axe hung frozen in midair. The executioner was rigid, his face pale, his gaze locked on the dais. King Damon was on his feet, his form radiating a furious, incandescent power. His golden eyes blazed with a feral light that seemed to pierce the dawn. Before either could speak, he was moving, descending the steps with a fluid, deliberate grace that was both terrifying and beautiful. The crowd parted before him like a wave. He stopped just feet from her, his burning gaze sweeping over her, a possessive fire in their depths. The silence stretched, thick with stunned disbelief. And then he spoke again, his voice not a roar this time, but a declaration that shattered every rule, every tradition. "I invoke the Code of Awol!" A collective gasp ripped through the crowd. The Code of Awol, an ancient, sacred, and almost never used rite, a binding of fates, a 30-day stay of execution, a king staking his own life on the innocence of a condemned traitor. Without another word, Damon closed the distance between them. He reached down, his hand wrapping around her arm, his touch a jolt of lightning that sent fire blooming beneath her skin. He pulled her to her feet, his grip unyielding. And as he turned to face the stunned court, his eyes locked on Valerius's shocked face, he uttered the words that changed everything. "She is mine now," he declared, his voice a low, possessive growl that left no room for argument. "And her failure will be my own." Chapter 7. The heavy oak door slammed shut behind her, the sound echoing like a tomb ceiling. And just like that, Doris was a prisoner. But this was no cold, damp dungeon. No, this was far worse. She stood in the king's private quarters, a cage made of silk and gold. Sunlight streamed through massive arched windows, illuminating dust motes dancing in the air like captured fairies. A fire crackled in a hearth carved from black marble, big enough to roast a whole deer. Tapestries depicting ancient, bloody battles hung on the stone walls. Their woven threads seemed to whisper tales of power, of conquest, of everything she was not. She was a wildflower trapped in a king's treasure box, and the luxury was suffocating. Her goal was simple, to find a way out, to understand what was happening. She walked over to the windows, her bare feet sinking into a plush rug the color of dried blood. From here, she could see the entire citadel courtyard, the execution block a tiny, grim speck below. She felt a wave of dizziness. She was safe. For now. But she was also trapped, a bird with clipped wings. She tried the door. Locked. Of course it was locked. What followed was a wave of pure, helpless rage. She wanted to scream, to beat her fists against the unyielding wood. But she didn't. Instead, she caught her reflection in a polished silver mirror hanging on the wall. a small, drab Omega in a simple tunic, lost in a sea of royal finery. Her reflection seemed to mock her, confirming her deepest fear. She was insignificant. Have you ever felt so out of place that the very air seems to reject you? That's how she felt. She was a smudge of dirt on a masterpiece. Then, the air thickened. The scent of pine and crisp winter frost filled the room, sharp and dominant. Without warning, the door opened, and King Damon entered. His presence consumed the space, sucking all the air from her lungs. He wasn't just a king. He was a force of nature, his golden eyes blazing with an intensity that pinned her in place. The space between them burned with unspoken questions, with raw power, and with the terrifying reality of the bond he had forced upon them. Time stood still. Her heart skipped. The tense, silent standoff between the king and his new charge had begun. Chapter 8. The first few days were a quiet, brutal war. They existed in the same space, but worlds apart. He would sit for hours at a massive desk, studying scrolls, the scratch of his quill the only sound. Meanwhile, she would sit by the fire, her goal to simply endure, to not give him the satisfaction of her fear. He questioned her relentlessly, his voice a low, probing rumble. He wanted to know about her life, her herbs, anyone she might have spoken to. And she answered with terse, defiant honesty, her voice trembling but unbroken. On the third day, a servant brought their midday meal. Moments later, Lord Valerius entered, a warm, charismatic smile plastered on his face. "My king," he said, bowing his head slightly to Damon, "and the Lady Doris. I came merely to see that our ward is settling in." His eyes, cold and calculating, raked over Doris. Deep down, she knew the truth. This was no friendly visit. This was an assessment. A taunt. Damon's jaw tightened, but he simply nodded. "She is contained." "Of course," Valerius said, his tone dripping with false sympathy. "A regrettable situation. The court whispers, you know. They question the wisdom of the Awoli, a king staking his life on a hedge witch." He let the insult hang in the air, a subtle poison directed at them both. "But I have assured them of your strength, my king. I reminded them of the story of your father, how he once showed mercy to a Black Claw scout and how that mercy was repaid with a bloody ambush. A king cannot afford to be seen as weak. Not now." The tension broke when Damon slammed his goblet down on the table. A beat later, he spoke, his voice dangerously soft. "My father's failings are not my own, Valerius, and my decisions are final." Valerius's smile never wavered, but his eyes glittered with something cold and triumphant. He had gotten what he came for. After he left, the silence roared. Doris stared at Damon, her chest aching. She saw the flicker of pain in his eyes at the mention of his father. An open loop, a wound that clearly had never healed. Before the words left her lips, she spoke, her voice flat. "He believes I'm already dead." The statement hung in the air, the first real seed of doubt about his most trusted friend finally planted in Damon's mind. Chapter 9. That night, she couldn't stand it anymore. The waiting, the helplessness. Her wolf, the part of her she had suppressed for so long, pressed forward, demanding action. She found Damon staring into the fire, the flames dancing in his golden eyes. She didn't know what scared her more, the silence or speaking up, but she had to. "I need to see him," she said, her voice stronger than she expected. Damon didn't turn. "See who?" "Elder Theron," she insisted. "Your healers are failing. They are looking for a common poison because that's all they know. I'm the one you've accused. I have 30 days, no, 26 now, to prove my innocence. Don't you see? I have more reason than anyone to find a cure." He finally turned, his gaze heavy. He saw her desperation, yes, but he also saw a fierce, defiant fire he hadn't noticed before. Maybe it was fate, or maybe it was the raw logic in her words, but something inside him shifted. Reluctantly, he agreed. From there, he escorted her to the elders' chambers. The air inside was stale, thick with the scent of sickness and failed remedies. The official pack healers, two stern-faced betas, glared at her with open hostility. They saw a usurper, a fraud. Doris ignored them. Her goal was to find a clue, to prove her worth. While the forest held its breath, she approached the elder's bed. She didn't use any magic, any fancy tools. She just looked. Her perceptive empathy, her core strength, took over. She saw the faint tremor in his fingers. She smelled the faint, bitter almond scent on his breath that everyone else had dismissed as a symptom of the sickness itself. And then, as if pulled by a string, her eyes were drawn to his inner forearm. Beneath the matted fur, almost invisible to the naked eye, was a small, faint rash, a pattern she recognized from the most obscure of her grandmother's teachings. Not only that, but she could feel a wrongness in the air, a lingering energy that felt designed. As the silence stretched, she turned to face the room, to face the king. Her voice trembled, but it was clear and loud, a bell ringing in the stuffy chamber. "This isn't common poison," she announced. "This is something else entirely, something designed." And with that declaration, she had just changed the rules of the entire game. Chapter 10. In the echo of his voice, a new tension settled in the king's study. The air was thick with the scent of old leather, wood smoke, and Damon's ever-present, intimidating frost and pine scent. This was it, her chance. Her goal was to convince him, to make him see beyond the frame-up. Doris stood before the king's massive desk, her hands clasped tight to stop them from shaking. "It's the rash, my king," she began, her voice a little stronger than before. And the scent on his breath. "It's not a simple toxin, it's a compound, something engineered." But then the door opened. Lord Valerius swept in, his presence as smooth and unwelcome as oil on water. "Ah, forgive my intrusion," he said, though his eyes showed no remorse. "I was just coming to give my report on the border patrols, but I see you're occupied." His gaze fell upon Doris, a look of indulgent condescension that made her skin crawl. "Doris was just sharing a theory," Damon said, his voice flat, his golden eyes unreadable. "A theory?" Valerius chuckled, a low, patronizing sound. "How wonderful. It's good that she has a hobby to pass the time." He turned to Doris, his smile all teeth. "Tell me, little one, what fanciful conclusions have you drawn?" Doris's frustration boiled over. "It's not fanciful. The signs are there." "Of course they are," Valerius interrupted gently, cutting her off. "And your effort is truly commendable. Truly. But you must understand, child, you are a healer of poultices and fevers. We are talking about royal alchemy, about matters of state. It's a bit like a house cat trying to understand the mind of a saber tooth. The scale is just different." He was a master. With every word, he praised her while simultaneously painting her as a simple-minded, desperate child. More importantly, he was playing on Damon's deepest fear, looking weak for trusting someone so far beneath his station. "Have you ever been spoken down to so expertly that you start to doubt yourself?" Doris felt her confidence crumble under the weight of his stare. No matter how hard she tried, she couldn't find the words to fight back. Damon remained impassive, a statue of cold authority. He listened, he nodded, and eventually, he dismissed them both. Yet, as Valerius turned to leave, triumphant, Damon's eyes met Doris's over his friend's shoulder, and he gave her a single, barely perceptible nod towards the far end of the hall, towards the royal library. The unspoken message was a spark in the darkness. Keep digging, but do it in secret. Chapter 11. That night, the Stoneheart Citadel was a sleeping beast of shadows and secrets. Doris, a ghost in the corridors, slipped into the royal library. It was a cathedral of knowledge, smelling of dust, decaying paper, and forgotten time. Towering shelves stretched up into the darkness, filled with countless scrolls and leather-bound tomes. Her goal was to find one book, one passage, one word that could save her. It was an impossible task. But what choice did she have? For hours, she worked by the light of a single flickering candle, her fingers tracing ancient scripts. Eventually, her instincts surged. As if pulled by a string, her hand fell upon a heavy, unmarked book bound in cracked black leather. The script inside was coded, ancient. But she was a healer. She understood the secret language of roots and leaves. And this was an extension of that. With every heartbeat, she worked to decipher the text. And then she found it. Her breath caught. A passage describing a poison of legend, one that used the rare Wolfsbane heart flower as its base. Her world tilted. The book confirmed the flower grew only on the treacherous cliffs of the Blackclaw territory. But what's worse, the passage described something else. To be lethal to a lichen, the flower's essence had to be stabilized by a very specific alchemical binding agent. An agent, the book noted, derived from mineral salts found only here, deep within the citadel. An agent that was kept under lock and key in the high-security royal apothecary. In the span of a breath, everything changed. This wasn't just an attack from an enemy pack. This was a conspiracy. It was an inside job. It was a betrayal from within their own walls. A jolt of pure, chilling terror shot through her. Creak. The sound of the library door opening. Without thinking, her body moved on instinct. She slammed the book shut, blew out the candle, and dove behind a towering shelf. Her heart hammered against her ribs, a wild drum in the sudden, suffocating darkness. She heard the heavy echo of footsteps, slow and deliberate, walking through the very chamber where she held the truth in her hands. Chapter 12. The moment the footsteps receded, Doris ran. She fled through the dark corridors, clutching the ancient tome to her chest as if it were her own heart. She burst into Damon's chambers, her breath coming in ragged gasps. "I found it," she choked out, slamming the heavy book down on his desk. "I found the proof." She pointed to the passage, her finger trembling. "Wolfsbane heart from the Blackclaw Cliffs, but it needs a binder, an alchemical agent from our own apothecary. It has to be someone with access, someone high ranking." Under the weight of his stare, Damon read the passage. She watched his face, saw the dawning horror in his golden eyes. He looked up at her, the truth unraveled between them. The fragile trust they had built had just been forged into a terrible, undeniable certainty. The core emotional question of his life, "Can you trust anyone?" was being answered in the most brutal way imaginable. His most trusted friend was a viper. But then, before either could speak, the doors to his chambers burst open again. A loyal guard, his face pale and sweating, stumbled in. "My king," he panted. "It's Elder Theron. He's fading fast." As if summoned by the news, a roar of outrage echoed up from the great hall below. It was Valerius's voice, amplified by the fury of the crowd. "The Omega's poison runs its course. The Owoli has failed. The king's mercy has doomed us. We demand justice." The pressure was immense. The trap was closing. Doris felt the air leave her lungs. They had the truth, but Valerius had the power. He had the pack. Damon's hand slammed down on the ancient book, the sound like a thunderclap in the room. He looked at Doris, his eyes blazing with a new, cold, and dangerous fire. The time for doubt was over. The time for grief was over. "This was never just about you," he said, his voice a low, deadly growl that promised retribution. "He's making his move, and he's using you as the sacrificial lamb." Chapter 13. In the quiet that followed the guard's departure, the king's study felt like the eye of a hurricane. The damning truth of the ancient book lay open on the desk between them, a silent accuser. Damon paced before the hearth, a caged lion trapped not by stone walls but by the ghosts of his own past. He was a king. He was a warrior. He was a man about to break. As the silence stretched, Doris felt her own fear recede, replaced by a wave of empathy for the powerful, broken man in front of her. Her goal was no longer just to survive, it was to understand. Finally, he stopped, his back to her. "My father," he began, his voice rough, heavy with a pain he had clearly carried alone for years. He was a good man, a trusting man. His beta, a wolf he considered a brother, betrayed him. He led the Black Claws through a secret pass, right into my father's hunting party. I was just a boy. I watched them tear him apart because he refused to believe a friend could be a viper. His confession hung in the air, raw and bleeding. Between one breath and the next, she saw it all. His obsession with control, his fear of weakness, his terror of trusting anyone. That's why he had been so cold. That's why he almost let her die. It wasn't malice. It was trauma, deep and festering. As if pulled by a string, she moved towards him. "You are not your father, Damon," she whispered, the name leaving her lips for the first time without the title. Her hand, small and trembling, rested on his arm. His muscles were stone beneath her touch. He didn't pull away. Instead, he slowly turned, his golden eyes filled with a storm of grief and a flicker of something she had never seen before. Gratitude. "He is my oldest friend, Doris. Valerius. He was there that day. He helped me escape. The ultimate betrayal. The man who saved him was now the man trying to destroy him. In that moment, their pact was sealed not by a code, but by shared vulnerability." "The book said the flower grows on the Black Claw Cliffs," she said, her voice firming with purpose. "There is a ravine near the Shadowfen. It's a place no one would think to look. If they have a camp, it will be there." He looked at her, truly looked at her. And for the first time, he wasn't seeing a hedge witch or an omega. He was seeing an ally, a weapon. "We need physical proof," he said, his voice now a low, dangerous growl. "Something that ties him directly to them." Before she could move, he walked to a weapons rack, pulling a small, perfectly balanced dagger from its sheath. He pressed it into her hand. "I will not let you go out there defenseless," he said, his fingers brushing hers. The touch was practical, a king arming his soldier, but beneath it, fire bloomed beneath her skin. The lesson was laced with a fierce, protective tension that had nothing to do with strategy. Chapter 14. The Black Claw territory was a twisted, dying version of their own forest. The air was colder, carrying the scent of rot and stagnant water. The trees were gnarled claws reaching for a bruised sky. They moved like shadows, Damon's powerful strides silent on the dead leaves, Doris's smaller form sticking close behind him. Her goal was to guide them, to find the camp. His goal was to keep her alive. With every step he took, her pulse raced, a mix of terror and a strange, exhilarating thrill. Suddenly, he froze. He grabbed her, pulling her behind a thick, moss-covered boulder. His body was a wall of muscle and heat, shielding her completely. "Patrol," he breathed, his voice a whisper against her ear that sent shivers down her spine. She held her breath. Through a crack in the rock, she saw them. Three hulking Black Claw warriors, their faces scarred, their eyes glowing with feral hunger. They were laughing, a cruel, guttural sound that made her blood run cold. They passed so close she could smell the stale sweat and blood on them. Trapped in the dark, silent intimacy of their hiding spot, Doris was intensely aware of Damon's body pressed against hers, the steady beat of his heart a counterpoint to her own frantic rhythm. The air thickened, charged with a danger that was both external and deeply, undeniably personal. The moment their eyes locked in the shadows, something cracked between them. Soon after the patrol passed, they found it. A small, cleverly hidden camp in a ravine, just as she'd predicted. It was recently abandoned. The embers of a campfire were still warm. And there, half buried in the mud near the fire pit, was a scorched but still legible piece of parchment. Damon knelt, pulling it free, his shoulders tensed as he read it. Without a word, he handed it to her. It was a letter, a request for a shipment of weapons to be delivered to a contact within the Citadel, in exchange for information on the King's patrol routes. It was signed with a bold, arrogant scrawl. Valerius's personal sigil. They had their proof. Chapter 15. In the echo of their shared, relieved breath, the world seemed to narrow to just the two of them. The adrenaline of the discovery, the victory after so much fear, it was a potent, intoxicating brew. Doris looked up at Damon, a real, unguarded smile finally reaching her eyes. We did it. You did it, Doris, he corrected, his voice husky with an emotion she couldn't name. He looked at her with such raw admiration, such hungry focus, that her breath caught. Gone was the king, the stoic ruler. This was just Damon, and he was looking at her as if she were the only thing in his world. Before either could speak, he closed the distance between them. His hands came up to cup her face, his touch surprisingly gentle. As if fate demanded it, he lowered his head, and his lips met hers. It wasn't a king claiming a subject. It was a man, desperate and grateful, kissing the woman who had become his only hope. It was fire and frost, desperation and relief, a promise sealed in the heart of enemy territory. But then, their perfect moment shattered. As they broke apart, a high-pitched magical shriek ripped through the air. A ward. They had triggered a ward. Without warning, the forest exploded with furious howls. Go! Damon roared, shoving her behind him as Black Claw warriors burst from the trees. What followed was a blur of violence. Damon moved like a shadow of death, his claws flashing, his fangs bared. A growl ripped from his chest, primal and terrifying. But there were too many. A warrior lunged at her, and Damon threw himself in the way, taking a shallow cut along his arm to protect her. He fought them off, giving her time to run. They escaped, crashing through the undergrowth, the sounds of pursuit finally fading behind them. Back in the relative safety of their own woods, they collapsed, breathing heavily. Her heart ached when she saw the blood seeping from the gash on his arm. Without thinking, she tore a strip from her cloak and knelt before him. Stay still, she whispered, her voice trembling as she began to clean the wound. His instincts surged, and for a second a low growl rose in his throat at her touch, but he let it happen. He let her care for him. In the stillness that followed, their roles of protector and healer, of king and omega, had blurred into something new, something real. They had their proof. But as they started the long walk back, they both knew the truth. They were returning to a citadel where the traitor was no longer hiding, but waiting for them, ready for war. Chapter 16. Hope. It was a fragile, dangerous thing. It warmed Doris's chest as she stood beside Damon, the traitor's letter clutched in her hand like a holy relic. They were a team, a united front. Their goal was to present their proof to a small group of Damon's most loyal council members to finally cut the head off the snake. A sense of grim readiness settled over them as they walked towards the council chambers. But the chamber doors were already open, and the low, angry hum of voices from within told them they were already too late. They walked into an ambush. The full council was assembled, their faces a mixture of confusion, anger, and fear. And at the head of the table, in the king's customary seat, sat Lord Valerius. He held up a piece of parchment, a perfect forged copy of the letter they had found. As you can see, Valerius said, his voice ringing with false sorrow, the evidence is undeniable. Our king, our Damon, has been conspiring with the Black Claws. A gasp rippled through the room. Damon roared, a sound of pure, disbelieving rage. Valerius, what is this madness? Valerius turned to him, his face a mask of tragic disappointment. It is the madness you started, my friend. We all feared your preoccupation with this Omega was a weakness. Now we see the truth. You sought to create chaos, to use the Black Claws to eliminate your own council so you could rule unchallenged with this witch at your side. Just as your father's mercy led to an ambush, your lust has led to treason. He used their proof, their hard-won, blood-soaked proof, and turned it into their condemnation. He twisted Damon's love for his father into a weapon against him. He used Damon's trust as the very poison to kill his reign. What's worse, the council, who had lived through the bloody aftermath of the last king's betrayal, was terrified of history repeating itself. Because of that, they listened. They believed. "This is a lie," Damon bellowed, lunging forward. "Guards!" Valerius shouted. "Your king is unwell. He is compromised. Confine him to his quarters until the council can deliberate on this tragedy." The loyal guards Damon had counted on, they hesitated. Their eyes darted between their furious, accused king and his calm, commanding Beta. And in their hesitation, the battle was lost. The world tilted. They chose Valerius. They chose the lie. And as they dragged a roaring, fighting Damon from the room, Doris stood frozen, the real letter in her hand now nothing more than a worthless piece of paper. Chapter 17. What followed was a swift and brutal consolidation of power. With Damon politically incapacitated and declared unfit, Valerius's authority became absolute. Doris was torn from the king's quarters, her brief taste of alliance and affection turning to ash in her mouth. She was dragged up the winding stairs of the citadel's highest tower and thrown into a small circular cell. Her new cage was not gilded. It was made of cold, unforgiving stone, with a single barred window overlooking the courtyard. That night he came to her. The charismatic mask Valerius wore for the court was gone, replaced by a look of pure, cold triumph. His scent of ozone and ambition filled her small cell, choking her. He stood there, watching her, savoring his victory. 3 days, he said, his voice a soft, sibilant sneer. "That's all the Awoli has left. 3 days until the magic fades and the executioner's axe finally falls. Not just on you this time, of course, on him too. A king who breaks his own sacred code for an Omega is no king at all." Her goal was to hold on to hope, to spit in his face, to show him he hadn't broken her. But despair was a cold, heavy blanket smothering her. She felt completely, utterly powerless. "Truth be told," he continued, leaning against the bars, "I should thank you. You were the perfect catalyst. So insignificant, so overlooked. No one would ever believe you. You were the stone I used to sharpen my blade." He pushed off the bars, his eyes glittering with a chilling malice that struck right at her deepest wound. "You should have stayed in your little cottage, Hedgewitch. You should have stayed insignificant." His voice dropped to a whisper. "Then, at least, you would have only died once." He left without another word. And as his footsteps faded, Doris dragged herself to the window. Through the iron bars, she could see the grand magical hourglass in the center of the courtyard, the one that measured the life of the Awola. The golden sand, which once seemed so plentiful, was now a terrifyingly small stream, whispering away the last moments of her life. And Damon's. Chapter 18. On the final night, the moon was a merciless silver eye in a black sky. Doris sat on the cold stone floor of her cell, her arms wrapped around her knees, watching the last grains of sand fall in the distant hourglass. Each grain was a heartbeat. His, hers, theirs. And they were almost gone. She had failed, utterly. Her attempt to find her voice, to be seen, to matter. It had all been for nothing. All she had done was drag the man who trusted her down into the abyss with her. The core question that had haunted her, could someone like her make a difference, had been answered. No, she was insignificant. Her actions had not saved anyone. They had only made everything worse, so much worse. A quiet, hollow despair settled in her chest, a feeling so vast and empty it consumed all the fear, all the anger, all the love. There was no goal left. There was nothing left but the end. Her thoughts spun, replaying every mistake, every wrong turn. She thought of their perilous journey, the feel of his lips on hers, the hope she had allowed to bloom in her heart. What a fool she had been. A single, hot tear traced a path down her cold cheek. And in the utter, desolate stillness of her soul, her mind, finally free from the panic of hope, drifted. It drifted back to Valerius's visit, to his sneering, triumphant face. Not his words, but something else. Something she had noticed but dismissed. Something her perceptive empathy had registered without her even realizing it. As if fate whispered a final secret, she remembered it. The scent. Underneath his own scent of ozone and power, there had been another fainter aroma on the cuff of his glove. A crushed, herbaceous smell. The scent of King's Thistle. It was an herb she knew well. An herb with no healing properties. An herb used for only one thing. To mask other, stronger scents. And just like that, as the last grain of sand was about to fall, a tiny, impossible spark ignited in the vast darkness of her despair. Chapter 19. Despair was a quiet, cold ocean, and Doris was drowning in it. But as the last grains of sand fell in the distant hourglass, her mind, untethered from hope, latched onto a piece of driftwood. King's Thistle. The memory was a tiny, insignificant detail from Valerius's visit. A scent. Why that scent? Her perceptive empathy, her one true strength, kicked in with the force of a tidal wave. King's Thistle wasn't a poison, nor a perfume. It was a masking agent. An herb used to hide other, more potent smells. Why would he need to hide his scent? Her thoughts spun, connecting threads she hadn't even realized she held. The market. Valerius, near the apothecary crates. The elders' chambers. The high security binder. Because he had been in the apothecary. Because he had handled the poison himself. In that moment, something inside her shifted. It wasn't hope that filled her. It was certainty. Cold, sharp, and as clear as glass. Despair was burned away by a new, fierce determination. Her goal was no longer to survive. It was to make him pay. She rose to her feet, her movements no longer sluggish with grief, but filled with a new, dangerous purpose. When the morning guard came, a weary-looking wolf named Silas, whose daughter she had once treated for a fever, she was ready. Her voice, when she spoke, did not tremble. "Your daughter, Alara," she said softly. "The rattling in her lungs has returned, hasn't it? And the pack healers say it is just a cough." Silas froze, his eyes widening in shock and fear. "How did you—" "Because it is not a cough," Doris continued, her gaze unwavering. "It is marsh lung from a fungus that grows on the river reeds. The healers miss it every time, but I know how to cure it. Permanently." As the silence stretched, she laid her trap. "Smuggle a message to the king's old captain of the guard, the one Valerius dismissed, and I will give you the cure." The guard was torn. Betraying the acting regent was a death sentence. But his daughter, his little girl. Have you ever been forced to choose between loyalty and love? That was the choice Silas faced. With every heartbeat, he warred with himself. Finally, he gave a single, curt nod. He would do it. And just like that, the first move in a new, desperate game had been made. Chapter 20. What followed was a tense, silent escape through the Citadel's forgotten veins. Silas led her through dusty service tunnels and behind ancient tapestries, his torch casting dancing shadows on the stone. He moved with the quiet efficiency of a man risking everything. "Valerius is holding a coronation ceremony at midday," he whispered, his voice tight. "He's going to declare the Awol magically void and name himself regent until a new king can be chosen. The whole pack will be there." They finally reached the old armory, a place long since abandoned. And there, pacing like a caged volcano, was Damon. He was weakened, his rage a palpable force in the room. When he saw her, a raw, guttural growl ripped from his chest. Before she could move, he crossed the room in two strides, pulling her into a fierce, desperate embrace. It wasn't a kiss. It wasn't tender. It was the collision of two soldiers on the eve of their final battle, a silent affirmation that they were all each other had left. "I will tear him apart," he snarled, his golden eyes blazing with fury. "No," Doris said, pulling back, her hands on his chest. Her touch was firm, grounding. "If you attack him, you prove him right. You become the monster he claims you are. Rage is not our weapon. The truth is." In the stillness that followed, he looked at her, truly seeing the transformation. The timid Omega was gone. In her place stood a woman of iron will. Her goal was now to formulate a plan, to focus his fury into a sharp, deadly point. Her partnership with Damon was no longer one of a king and his ward. It was one of absolute, desperate equals. They gathered their last resource, each other, and began to prepare for the public confrontation where they would have only one chance to turn the tide. Chapter 21. The air in the old armory was thick with the scent of rust, stone, and a desperate burgeoning plan. They were fugitives in their own home, their time measured in hours. Their goal was to forge a weapon not of steel, but of psychology. "We can't just present the letter," Damon growled, gesturing to the parchment she'd kept hidden. "He will say it's another forgery. He has already proven he can make the council believe anything." "I know," Doris replied, her voice steady. She was pacing now, her mind working faster than it ever had before. "So, we don't use the evidence to accuse him. We use it to trap him." She stopped and turned to face him, her eyes bright with a dangerous intelligence. She held up a small pouch of crushed herbs she had managed to grab from the healer's chambers before her imprisonment. "This is King's Thistle." Damon's brow furrowed. "The masking herb." "Exactly," she said. "He reeked of it after he visited my cell because he had been in the apothecary handling the binding agent. It's the one detail he doesn't know we know. It's the one variable he can't control." As the truth of her plan unraveled before him, Damon's rage began to cool, replaced by a dawning, grudging awe. Her plan was simple. It was brilliant. It was terrifyingly risky. It relied on his pride, his arrogance, and his belief that she was nothing more than an insignificant Omega who couldn't possibly outsmart him. She would not accuse him of treason. She would simply ask him a question. As the sky began to lighten with the first hints of dawn, Doris looked at the man she had risked everything for. "It won't be enough to accuse him," she said, her voice a quiet oath that sealed their fate. "We have to make him condemn himself." And with their final all-or-nothing plan set, they prepared to walk into the Viper's Nest. Chapter 22. The Great Hall was a sea of grim, surrendered faces. Valeria stood before the Alpha's throne, a wolf in king's clothing, his voice echoing with false piety. "And so, with a heavy heart, as the sands of the Awali have expired, the bond is broken, the traitor is dead, and our king lost to us." He reached for the heavy iron crown sitting on the throne. "She is not dead." The voice, clear and steady as a ringing bell, cut through the hall. And every head turned. Doris stood in the archway, no longer a cowering Omega, but a figure of quiet, unshakable strength. Her goal was singular: to expose the truth. A shocked murmur rippled through the crowd. Valerius froze, his hand hovering over the crown. He scoffed, a confident, dismissive sound. "The little hedge witch appears. Guards, seize her. Her time is up." But the guards didn't move, because from the shadows behind the throne, Damon emerged, his face a mask of cold, controlled fury. The air crackled. The tension broke. Doris walked forward, her steps measured and calm. She didn't hold up the letter. She didn't scream or cry. Instead, she looked directly at Valerius, her gaze pinning him in place. "My lord," she stated calmly, her voice carrying to every corner of the hall. "When you visited me in my cell, you had a peculiar scent on your gloves, the scent of crushed king's thistle. I was just wondering, why?" Valerius's confident smirk faltered, a flicker of panic in his eyes. "What is this nonsense? I know nothing of weeds." "Don't you?" Doris pressed, taking another step. That's strange, because King's Thistle is a powerful masking agent. It's what a wolf would use if, for instance, he had been handling the alchemical binding agent for a poison. An agent kept in the high-security royal apothecary. The same binding agent found in the now-cured Elder Theron's chambers. Panic bloomed on Valerius's face. He was trapped by an impossible detail. I have never been in the apothecary. I would have no reason. It's guarded day and night in the north wing, behind the iron door on the third shelf. And just like that, everything changed. The hall fell into a dead, stunned silence. He had condemned himself. He had just described the exact location of the secret shelf, information only the traitor and now the king could possibly know. Valerius realized his mistake a beat too late, his face contorted in a snarl of pure hatred. He drew a hidden blade. You insignificant little... He never finished. In the span of a breath, Damon was on him, a blur of righteous fury. The fight was not long. It was brutal, decisive, and final. As Valerius fell, the conspiracy shattered with him, and Doris, the quiet Omega, stood tall, her voice having saved a kingdom where claws and fangs had failed. Chapter 23. In the quiet that followed the violence, the Great Hall was a study in shock. The pack stared at the fallen Beta, then at their king, and finally, at the small Omega who stood beside him. Damon, leaning slightly on Doris for support, his breath still ragged, addressed his people. His voice was raw, but it was the voice of their true king. He told them everything. The lies, the frame-up, the way his own trust had been used as a weapon against them all. I was nearly consumed by the ghosts of my father's past, he confessed, his eyes finding Doris's. But this pack was saved by the strength of one who was overlooked, by the courage of one who was condemned. As if summoned, a deep, booming voice echoed from the side. He speaks the truth. Elder Theron, pale and thin but alive, walked forward, supported by two healers. He stopped before Doris, his old eyes filled with a profound gratitude. He bowed his head. You have my life and my loyalty, child. You are no hedge witch. You are the heart of this pack. From there, the tide turned completely. A wave of shame and then dawning respect washed over the crowd. Their animosity, so easily manipulated by Valerius, now transformed into fierce loyalty. Her public vindication was absolute. Damon dismissed the court, and moments later, she saw Silas, the weary guard, standing near the door. She walked over, pressing a small, tightly wrapped packet of herbs into his hand. For Alara, she whispered. He looked at her, his eyes shining with unshed tears, and gave a deep, grateful nod. As the hall emptied, the weight of the last 30 days began to settle. Yet, for the first time, she felt light. Chapter 24. Eventually, they were alone in the vast, empty hall. The scent of blood was already fading, replaced by the clean smell of the morning air filtering through the high windows. The space no longer felt like a cage or a courtroom. It felt like a home. Damon turned to her, the fire in his eyes banked, leaving only a deep, warm, and wondering glow. His goal was no longer to rule, but to heal. He didn't say thank you. He didn't have to. His eyes said everything. My entire life, he began, his voice a low, intimate murmur. I have lived in fear of betrayal. I built walls of stone and ice around my heart because I believed trusting someone was a fatal mistake. He reached out, his hand gently cupping her cheek. I almost let my father's ghost destroy us both. But my beast, my soul, it knew. It knew you were my salvation. He looked at the grand hourglass, its sands now still. The code of a wool is fulfilled, he said softly. The magical bond is complete, but I will not hold you to a bond forced by law and desperation. He took a breath, his vulnerability a precious gift. Our bond is no longer a matter of law, Doris. It is a matter of choice, my choice. His thumb stroked her skin. And now, it is yours. Choose me. Her goal was finally here, to be free. But she realized her freedom wasn't in leaving. It was in staying. It was in choosing the man who had seen her when no one else had. A radiant smile bloomed on her face. "I choose you, Damon." She felt it, clear as day. As her soul answered his, the faint tingling mark of the awole on her skin pulsed with a new warmth, sealing their true mating bond not with magic, but with love. Her transformation was complete. She had gone from a powerless prisoner to the king's chosen equal, and the answer to the story's great question was finally clear. Trusting him had been the ultimate act of faith. Epilogue. 1 year later, the autumn sun warmed the bustling market square. Doris, now a sight as common and beloved as the king himself, walked beside Damon, his hand held firmly in hers. She was no longer invisible. She was their Luna. The pack members greeted her not with suspicion, but with genuine smiles and respectful nods, which she returned with a quiet, easy confidence. Her world had tilted, and it had righted itself into something more beautiful than she could have ever imagined. They paused to watch the pack children tumbling and playing, their laughter echoing through the square. And in the easy, loving silence between them, in the simple act of holding his hand in the sunshine, was the promise of 1,000 more peaceful days to come. The love born from a death sentence had not only saved them, it had healed a kingdom.